Alan?
Yes?
Did they play the intro last night?
No.
It's because Nicholas wasn't aware and I should have called him.
Okay.
I think we're on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. I'm going to let Grandfather finish.
Yeah, Big Ben.
All right. Oh, here we go. Thanks for being here tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Darren had called me on Monday, yesterday, and asked if we would do the broadcast this entire week. He's training for another position. Darren is an engineer. I don't know if you're aware of that, at a TV station in Lansing, Michigan. But anyway, I guess he plays his own music. And it was, I should have called Nicholas, and Nicholas would have had the intro ready. And then we wouldn't sit here like dunces, not saying anything. Today is Tuesday. It's the 28th of March, of course, in the year 2006, and Alan Watt is with us this evening. And I drew a card from my Course in Miracles card little box. This is from the text. Page 271, says, in this world, you can become a spotless mirror in which the holiness of your Creator shines forth from you to all around you. You can reflect heaven here. I think that's what I was trying to say at one point, Alan, becoming a reflection of our Creator, but a reflection is a it's just an image, and I think this says it more understandably. We can become a spotless mirror in which the holiness of our Creator shines forth from us to all around us. Thanks for being here tonight.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Yeah.
Oh, my, my. We've got a real low volume there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't when we were first on the phone.
And it never is.
No. Well, thanks for taking over last night.
Yeah,
Alan, there was something that I wanted to mention tonight. It's simply because it's something that's important to me. I've been doing some research, and this is for our listeners who have pets. You know, when Molly was 9 weeks old, she weighed 9 pounds, and Molly is a little lab Rottweiler mix, folks, but she really looks all lab. Anyway, when I took her in just to have a checkup and make sure she didn't have worms and et cetera, she had her first distemper. And she was 9 pounds now, Alan. And the distemper isn't just a distemper shot. It's distemper and parvo and something else. So they're actually injecting three different types of organisms into them. Same thing they're doing to the children, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, when they give the children their diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussin shot.
Yeah.
And he turned around to a drawer, you know, to a table, and when he turned back around, he had a big needle with a large vial of stuff in it, and he walked back to the table. And I said, Dr. Cutler, what is this? What is that? And as I said it, he shot it into her and injected it, and it was her rabies shot. But it isn't just a rabies shot they get. There's corona and some other illness that a puppy can get or a dog can get that isn't even fatal, Alan. And I said, isn't that an awful lot to put into a little 9-pound puppy before their, you know, their immune system is even firmly functional.
Yeah.
And it's just with the way we do it, he says, you know. And Alan, he's a good doctor. I mean, good in the way that he cares about the pets, the animals, and he's very thorough. And yet, when I scheduled her to have her spay, they said that she had to have a booster, what do you call it, distemper?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, I'm not giving her another distemper shot. She had two of them. That's all we've ever given. And she said, well, then we wouldn't be able to bring her in because we wouldn't take a chance on the other. So I let them give her a booster. And I asked him about it. He said, well, we do it annually now. I don't know when this started. Anyway, I was asking him about, you know, when they do the spay, they take the uterus out, and I ask if they leave the ovaries. And I asked him if he's going to leave the ovaries, and he looked at me quizzically, and he said, no. I said, why? He said, why would we leave them? I said, well, isn't that where the hormone production is? I mean, to me, it would be like throwing a woman who has a complete hysterectomy, throwing her immediately into the change with hormonal imbalances that are unbelievable. And he said, well, she still would cycle. I said, but there's not going to be any blood. There won't be any uterus. She can't get pregnant. And he says, well, there's a little tiny bit of the uterus left. And then I said, well, I don't understand, you know, why that means the ovaries have to. And then he just kind of shrugged. And he said, well, that's the way we were taught.
Yeah.
So I started doing some research. I said, well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to do some research, and then we'll determine whether those ovaries are going to go or not. So every single article I read, they call it ovariohysterectomy.
Yeah.
And that's what they do. And finally, I got into some holistic websites, you know, for animals. And I wrote to one of them and asked what their, opinion or knowledge is about it. And she wrote back today and said, well, there are people now who are asking the vets, and successfully, to leave at least one ovary to, you know, allow for the balance, the hormones that the dog needs. And because they say that once the female is spayed, in her later years, she becomes incontinent, and it causes weight gain. And I just wanted to, I got into some wonderful articles about vaccines, and there are many veterinarians who are saying the over-vaccination is just unnecessary and harmful. It causes all kinds of illnesses and weaknesses in the dogs.
Yeah.
And, for example, the distemper. They said to give a distemper past a year is totally ridiculous because mostly the susceptibility to distemper is in the first year.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the rabies vaccine, this one article, the man did some real thorough research and found out, this was in Pinellas County, Florida. It was a doctor of veterinary medicine, but he was holistic. And there was an association of two veterinarians, and there were four of them that actually pushed for this in the state, for the state to mandate that there had to be a yearly rabies shot. And several articles that I read said the same thing. Once a dog has had a rabies shot, they can do a blood test 10 years down the road and still find antibodies to the rabies. But yet, every single year, they're getting them. And I wanted to bring this up because I think a lot of people have a tendency to just believe what the, quote, doctor says. And I've made up my mind that she will have her ovaries left in, and she will not be getting any more of the annual boosters that are not necessary. And I just wanted to bring this up so that our listeners who may have pets, and we love our animal companions, and it's really, they're totally at our mercy, aren't they, Alan?
Well, they are, yeah.
Take care of them. And anyway, I just wanted to share that before we got on with something else. What are your thoughts on that, any?
Well, I think it's pretty well like everything else in professions. The ones who go to university get downloaded with techniques and so on, which they themselves don't question. In fact, the whole thing...
Ellen, boy, I can barely hear you. Would you try to talk loud till we get the volume going there?
Yeah, the whole thing is the doctors themselves are being trained or downloaded with techniques. And the whole idea at university is to simply parrot back what you've been taught.
That's right.
Without question.
Because that's what he said. Ultimately, he just, you know, I said, I still don't understand why the ovaries have to come out. And he shrugged. And he said, well, that's the way we were taught. And so there was no question in his mind.
No, no, it doesn't occur to them.
And as far as these vaccines, I mean, there were several articles, really good ones that I read, and they said that they usually get the vaccines for anywhere from 60 to 90 cents a dose,
uh-huh.
and they charge anywhere from $15 to $25.
That's right.
So they're making a lot of money. They said usually, and it was a veterinarian that wrote this article. He said their profits and their gross, a tremendous amount of their gross income comes from all of these vaccines.
Sure it does. Sure it does. You see, this is a problem in our system that's money-based and getting ahead, as they say, which is getting as high as you can in the money tree.
Yeah.
You cannot keep ethics and morality apart from profit in the system, when profit is the motive. And so anything to do with medicine becomes corrupted.
Yeah.
As soon as a monetary gain is involved. And that's a sad statement on our affairs, but it's the same in the medical industry for humans or the veterinary system for animals. It's profit-based, and you cannot mix morality and ethics with profit. But that's exactly what you see, people go into these professions today for the money and the status. I mean, that's the reason they go in. In fact, there's people now whose families traditionally were lawyers, who are telling their children to become veterinarians because that's where the big money is coming.
Uh-huh.
Because people will spend everything they've got to save their little dog or a cat, especially the people in the big cities. Where you can't even get a friend in the same building, so that they're gouging them for through emotion, and the promise to, or not even the promise to save the animal, but you know the hope that you can save the animal. So ethics cannot be mixed with morality when it comes to life.
I'm thinking that we need to disconnect and try to reconnect because your volume is so low that it's almost impossible to hear you. And that this is so weird because you called about 5 minutes till.
Yeah.
The volume was perfect. And then we get on the air and your voice, and it isn't, of course, from the station because you and I are connected together.
Yeah.
And, but if Nicholas is there and could put on some music, I don't like leaving a lot of blank space, but maybe we'll just go ahead. Folks, if you would give us a couple or 3 minutes, I'm going to try have Alan call back and see if we can get a better connection. Okay, so I'll hang up, Alan.
Okay,
bye.
Yeah, but now your voice is up.
Oh, no, it's fine.
That's better now, yeah.
Oh, yeah, now I can hear you real well.
Okay.
That has to be very frustrating for our listeners because so many of them listen.
Yeah.
As you do the broadcast with me, and so that's good, thanks. Well, I'm glad I took the time to do the research that I did because it gave me the confidence. You know, one other thing I'm going to check out are the doggone heartworm pills.
Oh, I'll tell you, I was talking to a vet up this way, and even though it's a big fad now to push the heartworm, he said as far north as I am, he said they haven't had a single case of heartworm.
I wouldn't think so.
That's what he said.
You don't have a lot of mosquitoes, do you, Alan?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, do you?
Uh-huh.
Oh, but you're so far away from the...
The madding crowd.
The madding crowd, yeah. Well, you know, the thing is here, where we are, I'm at 1,800 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And the only time we ever have mosquitoes if it's rained a lot and then gets really hot, you know, when the ground is really moist.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, the breezes blow so consistently.
Yeah.
There just aren't mosquitoes. I don't have Molly or Mariah on heartworm.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, because unless we do our own homework, we don't know for sure whether we should or shouldn't.
Yes, I know.
And sometimes the cure is worse than the, you know.
Sometimes the cure is fatal.
Right, exactly. And we're taking a chance. But I am going to look into that before she goes on to heartworm. And I haven't had Mariah on it for, Mariah or Tessie, for at least 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a jungle, isn't it, though?
Yeah.
Trying to get to it. Again, it's such a huge business. It's a huge, the whole pharmaceutical business is massive. And again, they have a big stay in training students at universities through grants and loans, and so they make sure that their particular thing is pushed as part of the training. You see.
That's right.
And the vets or doctors end up pushing those products and doing techniques this way, never questioning, because it doesn't occur to them generally that there's another motive behind it. You know, it generally doesn't occur to them. I'm sure so many doctors today are still given inoculations, and seeing the effect of autism occur in families that they've actually injected.
Yeah.
And yet they're still in denial that because...
But it was the vaccine that caused it.
Yeah, because they've been taught that they're somehow holier than thou, they're gods.
Yes.
And surely they would not be misled. That's what they think. And it's so easy to train whole generations of people in a lie when you tell those same people that there's some kind of saviors in medicine and surgery, mostly medicine, but that's where we are today, that the profit motive is so incredibly huge, and the big companies have a massive say in what is taught in universities at all levels.
Yes.
If you look at the Rockefeller Foundation, I don't think there's a single university in Canada or the States that doesn't get a grant for them.
And that they control.
That's right. Along comes a list of subjects and what they'd like to be taught and what they'd like to be omitted.
Yeah.
And that's the reality of the life we live in. Yeah.
And, you know, of course, a lot of it has to do with the money.
Mm-hmm.
But Jeff said, why they just don't miss anything.
Mm-hmm.
Why they're even doing it to the animals. I said, well, you know, another thing it does, besides costing a lot of money, it creates anguish.
Yeah.
For the people.
Mm-hmm.
For the pet owners, when their pets, this one article, God, it was a good one, and this woman said she has been researching for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And doing a lot of her own testing and that. Following animals after they've been vaccinated, etc.
Mm-hmm.
He used the example, they'll bring a 6-week-old puppy in for their first distemper, and maybe in this otherwise healthy little puppy, Oh, the first time might run a fever and be a little lethargic for a day or so. Next time, a couple, 3 weeks later, they're brought in for their second one. And as she pointed out, when they're putting the vaccine for three separate conditions, and she said in Mother Nature, in nature, that just doesn't happen. They aren't confronted with three separate diseases all at one time.
That's right.
And she said they're very rare to find today, but if pet owners will try to get single, like maybe give them a tetanus vaccine the first time,
mm-hmm.
and then the parvo the next time.
Yeah.
Wait a couple weeks in between. But then she said, after that third time, she gave some of the symptoms, and she said one of them was that they'll start itching, and there's no fleas. Molly itches her. Remember I told you, Alan?
Mm-hmm.
Always scratching?
Yeah.
And she doesn't have a dry coat, and she doesn't have fleas.
Mm-hmm.
And she also, there were amongst the ones, there were two that Molly does consistently. She licks her feet a lot. And
yeah.
I don't know why, but that was one of them that was on the list of what they've noticed after, you know, they've had these vaccines.
Mm-hmm. It's true, because they sweat through their feet.
But why is she licking her feet? She licks her feet a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it causes a little fever after inoculation.
I know, but what I'm saying is this is, she hasn't had, now, she did have one just last week, but until then, she hasn't had one since she was like, you know, 10 weeks old.
Oh, yeah.
And so, but that's what she does a lot.
Mm-hmm.
She lays there and licks her feet.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is, but she said a lot of, other problems it causes. The dogs have a problem gaining weight. They don't fully develop or as well as they could.
Yeah.
Oh, and she also mentioned
temperamental disturbances too.
She mentioned anxiety, separation anxiety.
Yeah.
And they always have to be with their owner. She called them Velcro puppies.
Yeah.
And boy, I'll tell you, Molly's my little shadow.
Mm-hmm.
So she's exhibiting, actually I said there were two of them, but there were four of them that the woman mentioned, and Molly is exhibiting four of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that it makes me angry, and what my regret is, Alan, that I didn't look into this a lot sooner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, people think it's so easy to get an animal. They don't generally think beyond it, because we're trained to believe in this system that we're somehow being taken care of by the professionals, you see.
Yeah.
That's part of our conditioning. So we think as far as getting the animal, but we don't think of the things that are all involved around that. And it isn't just a matter of you choosing the animal. Now they've got laws all over the place where you must get this for the animal. And you
it's
must
like the rabies shot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, of course, even when you go to the veterinarians, I don't know about the U.S. or the states within the U.S., but in Canada, they automatically report it to the authorities that this person has a dog at this address, you know.
Right.
So, see, we're overrun by big brothers everywhere.
Oh, my God.
Uh-huh. And at the same time, I know one guy from Pennsylvania phoned a couple of days ago, and his daughter is just going into New York University, and to get in to the university now, they're demanding that you can show your early, your inoculation data, or they won't let you in.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, see, I'm wondering about this. When I said, no, I'm not having... She's not getting any more distemper shots.
Mm-hmm.
And the girl on the phone said, well, we wouldn't be able to let her come have her surgery then because we just couldn't risk our other patients.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to print some of these out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to give them to Dr. Cutler to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
But I will find a veterinary clinic that will take her without the boosters. Or, I don't know.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens next year when her booster comes due.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, this blackmail stuff is getting beyond a joke, you know.
It is. It's blackmail.
We have no choices. You see, we're given no choices in anything anymore. It's this way or no way. Yeah. And that's getting the same now with sending children to school. They've got to have all these inoculations up to date. It's the same Big Brother complex where everything's being observed and noted and observed through their lives, whether it's animal or human. This is getting deep, a totalitarian system. Well, it is a totalitarian system. We're just getting more techniques put in place to observe us all.
You know, I read about the tetanus vaccines they're giving the children.
Uh-huh.
You know, because they're, you know, when we were little, I remember once I stepped on a carpenter's nail in a board.
Mm-hmm.
It almost went through my foot, the ball of my foot.
Yeah.
And they took me down right away to get a tetanus shot. That makes sense,
mm-hmm.
Somewhat. But what I was reading about them, tetanus is not a virus, it's bacteria.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that you can't vaccinate against a bacteria.
Well,
I mean, it's something that's not even around.
Well, it's not so much that. It's the fact that you'd be very hard-pressed to see a doctor that's ever seen a case of tetanus.
Right.
That's the real problem here. That everybody, every student gets shown the same old photograph of somebody with this awful-looking face taken back in the early 1900s, and they're all shown the same thing, and they explain to them what it's caused by. But you'll never find someone who's actually seen a case of it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And if it's supposed to be prevalent in the soil and the ground, etc., I mean, farmers are out there all the time cutting themselves and getting scratched and
right.
things, and they don't come down with tetanus. So it's such a ridiculous... I think it's a scam.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. Or there's an ulterior purpose for giving it to people.
Oh, Alan.
Yeah.
You hit that right on the head.
That's the scary part. And again, all those trained in medicine are hard-pressed to come to that conclusion because they truly are. The best fool in the occult is a willing fool.
Uh-huh.
In other words, they must believe in what they're doing. And, of course, all these people are trained to believe in what they're doing. And it never dawns on them that there's an ulterior motive in that little vial of liquid that they're giving. Even though they've never, ever seen the inside of one of these laboratories where it's made. It's all taken on faith. And that's how this whole system works, is on faith. Right down to the mother that brings the child in for the inoculation. It's a teaching, faith-based system. And yet these big laboratories are guarded like you know, concentration camps. You can't get into them. They're like highly classified areas. You can't get into them and have an inspection of by the public. And you've got to say, well, why? And, of course, we know that the depopulation program that was on the go from the early 1900s and spoken about and written about in many, many books from the Rockefeller Foundation of Eugenics, the Eugenic Society, on population reduction, talked widely about using inoculations to bring down the populations of...
Yes. Alan, yeah. It's in the protocols.
It's in the protocols, too.
Yes, it is.
And I think it goes probably even further back than that, because the elite have always used techniques of bringing down populations when it gets beyond a certain manageable size for them to control. So why should it have stopped, you know, in the 20th century? Of course it didn't.
Right.
Any more than it stopped in the 21st century. It's on the go, and the best way is to get it done by a method which the public will never suspect, but it's trained to believe that medicine is the savior.
Yeah, the white smock guy.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you read the history books, the most often asked question to Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War from the Old Paths Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free? Or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD and judge for yourself. War of Federal Aggression. Get this DVD presentation for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it, it has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased, it has been stolen, there's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty, to ourselves and to our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, and regular guest, world-renowned economist Robert Chapman, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188.
You're listening to the FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
All right, we're back with Alan Watt. I was thinking of this, Alan, talking about the vaccines being used as, I'd say, a big, very large part of their plan for depopulation.
Mm-hmm.
Are you there, Alan?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In one of the articles, and it was so well written about the vaccine, she explained it technically, but in layman enough terms that you understood what she was discussing. And she was saying that many of the vaccines are from, I think they're called modified live viruses,
mm-hmm.
MLVs.
Yeah.
And she said that what they do is they alter the virus, and the agent that they use to alter it with is formaldehyde.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes into the system along with the mercury, the thimerosal, and aluminum. And I don't think the body naturally easily expels those metals, those heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Do they, Alan?
No, they tend to get to the brain and stay there, you know. In fact, in the 1970s, the studies done in Britain found that in all the Alzheimer's patients that were on increase...
Aluminum.
It was all aluminum particles in their brain.
Yes.
So this has been known for a long time, and they knew it was from inoculations.
But, Alan... Think about people for years used aluminum cookware.
Oh, I know. And that was promoted again from the top.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
There's nothing given to the public for the public's benefit. It's always for an ulterior motive by those who run the world. And of course, that's why they pushed. They knew from before World War II In fact, even you in the days of Egypt, ancient Egypt, what aluminum did to the people who worked in the mines and so on. The same with asbestos. I mean, the Egyptians had a word. Actually, it comes from asbestos, from the Egyptian. They knew that the mine workers got this disease, and they knew all the signs and symptoms of it. So this stuff is ancient knowledge. It's not new. And yet, through the keeping the people ignorant, they can recycle the same stuff and use the same techniques over again and say, this is good for you. It's been done over and over again. And we're all trained to believe in the scientific elite.
Yeah.
Like Bertrand Russell said, they do, they train the public. And if you read Jacques Ellul, who worked for the United Nations, the top sociologist for the planet, basically, he was quite open. He says all teaching is done through radio and television. He says through fiction. He says they elevate the doctors through television series and dramas. They elevate the legal system through dramas. And the police system, these are three main elements of controlling the public. And yet we're downloaded through fiction to see it in a different light than that which really exists. So he said that all of these dramas are actually propaganda. That's how we're trained.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Through our entertainment.
Through entertainment, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right. So it's an indoctrination technique. You have no sensor part of your brain working when you think you're being entertained. So you don't stop and say, wait a minute, that doesn't seem right, or whatever. You get carried along with a story, which you, and you can identify with the characters in the story.
Yeah.
And through emotive techniques, through emotion, you're actually being indoctrinated into seeing this supposed science in a different light than really exists, you know. And those people, those professions are then elevated in your subconscious and your conscious mind to be more superior than they actually are in reality.
Well, there was a series on, maybe it's still on, called ER.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, emergency room.
It's well named, though. It's to error, you see.
Error, yeah. Well, that seems a lot of people follow that almost religiously.
Yes, and of course, the whole DNA thing now, where they want everyone a DNA type, and they've been doing it actually for quite a few years on the quiet, but that CSI series that they have out there, where every second line is get his DNA, you know, or get the body's DNA, or get this DNA or that DNA.
And you know how they make it sound good too, don't you?
Yeah, I know.
You tell about, we've let 7 people off death row.
That's right.
By being able to tell by their DNA that they weren't the killer.
Yeah, that's it. So it's pure indoctrination. And the public know when something happens in an area. I mean, in Toronto a couple of years ago, a little girl was killed. They knew it was a pedophile who killed her, a sexual predator. And the media were into action, well, big time. And that's all you heard every day was about this, the hunt for this killer down in Toronto, near Toronto beaches. And this went on for maybe a month and a half, 2 months. And they had all the women, the mothers in the area, nervous wrecks to see who was going to be next. And then the police were going around door to door asking for the DNA samples from every male, street after street after street. And they were giving it, thinking, well, I guess it's the law.
Yeah, it'll prove me innocent.
Yeah, but it's also because they've been trained by television that this is somehow law.
Oh.
You see? So they were doing it automatically, thinking, I guess it's like television, I guess this is law. And all the time the police knew who it was, because they monitor all these released convicts, pedophiles, and they know exactly who they are, where they are, and all the rest of it. So I think that was one big exercise on the public, actually.
And the sickness of it is, think about it, right back to the get-go, they let them go, Alan.
I know.
Let them go to do it again.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And then monitor them.
Mm-hmm.
That was like the article that I had. It just blew my mind away. It was when they were having the Olympics in Atlanta. And the article was a fairly large article, newspaper, probably, I don't know which one it was, but one of the big ones, and it told how they had done a sweep all over the entire region or area, and a whole bunch of different police forces, and they all came together, and they rounded up 700 and some known criminals, killers, thieves. They knew where to find them, Alan. And I, when you're reading that, and you're going, "Oh my God," they, you could tell by the way it was written that they knew where they were.
Yes.
And at the end of the article, it said it is not determined yet whether or not they're going to be released after the events were over. Oh my God.
I know. But that's again how you keep the public. See, you got to have crime amongst the public ongoing to build up a massive police force, which really is an internal army working for those who own the system. And that's why you have the revolving door generally of criminals out in society. It keeps the whole thing going. If there was very little crime, it'd be hard pressed to keep all these police men in work, you see, which again is an army that's really there to serve and protect those who are their masters. So they've got to have crime going on all the time. But nothing in life really is really the way it's presented. It's different. Yeah. It's very, very different. There was an RCMP officer in Canada.
Is that the Royal Mounted Police?
Yeah, only generally they're not on horses.
Right.
Except for shows. You know,
so they're sort of like the state police in the States?
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're sort of like the FBI in a sense. And the RCMP, this guy was sent undercover to work with the Hells Angels to find out their drugs, their movements of drugs and this kind of stuff. And he brought a book out eventually, almost as a protest against his superiors, because he could never figure out why, when he had all the information there, you might see he had the dope on the dope, and the superiors wouldn't get raids going on to stop it from happening or confiscate it, and eventually he was reprimanded and then he was suspended for insisting that his superiors
do something about it.
Do something when he had all the information on the shipments, where they were going, the times, all this kind of stuff, and eventually there was an interview on the CBC television about it and about his book, and I could tell by the way the guy was speaking he still hadn't figured out that his bosses and the criminals were all part in the same group.
Sure.
They need each other. They got to have drugs in society to keep the police force up and to begin with, to have the crime going on.
And then, think about this. They report it on network news. And nothing is done about it. And talk about the frustration that must cause, Alan. Here it is. It's known. It's in a book. It's on network news. Still, nothing is done. And nothing is done to or about the superiors that wouldn't do anything about it.
That's correct.
Sometimes talking about this, it boggles. I mean, we know it, but God, Alan, the insanity just could drive you crazy.
Oh, absolutely. The world, the real world, is completely different from the indoctrination, the indoctrinated version. The real world is totally different from that version. And that's where we're all trained to see the, I call it level one reality, that's the indoctrinated version. And of course, there's another two layers at least above that. And as they go up the scale, some of them catch on to what's going on, other ones never catch on. To what's going on. And that police officer, you could tell this guy was sincere. He still hadn't figured out why. He really was confused. You know.
Well, at least he was a thinking person.
Mm-hmm.
And he did something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wrote it, and he spoke out, and God love him.
But isn't it strange? You can be watched and monitored about your business dealings, your financial dealings, the money you spend in a grocery store, all this kind of stuff. And people all over the country who take drugs can phone up certain numbers and have it delivered to their doorstep at any time, night or day, nationwide, and they just can't figure out who's doing it. Who's kidding who?
Yeah.
You know.
And you know, when you see living in the U.S., I used to call it America.
Mm-hmm.
But living in the U.S. and seeing what's happening and the, quote, force behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, so much of it comes from the U.S.
Yeah.
And then you think of going, you know, just leave.
Yeah.
And then you wonder, okay, where do you go?
Mm-hmm.
Can't go far enough into the woods. They just burn the woods down.
Yeah. I know.
And I wonder if there's a country or a place in a country in this world mm-hmm. where a person could go and live in some kind of a place that is like out of the world. You know what I mean, Alan?
Yeah, I know. Untouched, yeah.
Untouched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. And we're up again. Well, again, when we've all been sleeping or trained to be asleep in countless generations before us, these boys have been so busy working with the sciences for today to make sure that they could monitor everything from space and satellites and all the rest of it. It's mind-blowing to see the planning that has gone into this to where we are today. Incredible, minute micromanagement and planning has gone on by thousands of think tanks employed by the big rich men of the planet, and they've pretty well missed nothing, you know.
No.
Yeah.
No, and with those satellites, Chuck told me about this. They had a photograph taken from a satellite,
mm-hmm.
and it was a fast pitch in baseball, and they were able to zero in so close and literally catch it in one frame.
Yeah.
And if they can do that, it's true, they could see a mole on your rump.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
And I wonder if those people in the satellites,
mm-hmm.
if they just get a vicarious thrill out of just eavesdropping on people, like for fun when they're bored.
Oh, I'm sure they do. They do it on the phones.
I know.
We've all had experience on the phones. And, I mean, often at night, if you're talking about the occult to somebody, there's silence. And if you get off the topic into politics or something, then they start tapping and make all these noises. Because it's the young guys they put on the night shift, and they get bored listening to that kind of stuff. But they love the occult, you see, so they leave you alone then. It's either that, it's either listening to you or Art Bell, you know. So they give you all these little taps on the phone when you wander from the favorite topics.
Oh, they like it when you talk about the...
The occult, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do?
Oh, yeah, they leave you alone. You have silence then, but you wander off it into just everyday politics or what we all do. We tend to go into the bitching mode, you know, because we're so fed up.
Uh-huh.
Then these young guys who are the sort of apprentice eavesdroppers, you might say,
uh-huh.
put on the night shift, they get bored and they start tapping the phone and making all noises.
You know what I think about? I think about how boring it must be when my sis and I are having our daily Yahtzee game on the telephone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure they put the lowest guy that's just started work, you know, on that one. Yeah, that's what they'll do, you know. Just to give them patience, you see.
Yeah.
But it's the same, too. Sure, they showed a few years ago in the British Daily Mail, which you can buy over here, they showed a full page of this huge, well, it was only part of a room, but it was an incredible room, a circular room, really, with hundreds of television screens, and all these, mainly women, sitting watching them all. And this is from the cameras in London, just in one area. And they also said that not only could they watch all the people and again zoom in on, as you say, a mole on them, you know, or a hair on their chin, they could also use boom, little tiny boom microphones, and hear conversations in doorways at over 200 yards away. So this is the incredible observation we're under, that George Orwell talked about in his book, you know, 1984. We're here.
I think it might have been in Canada I was reading about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, but some city that was just putting in gobs and gobs of cameras.
Yeah.
And in other places, they said. And mm-hmm. I thought about the parks.
Yeah.
Remember in 1984?
Mm-hmm.
No matter where they went, there were microphones and cameras.
That's right.
In the bushes, in the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, my God, when I read it, I said, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably putting them in the parks and
yeah.
camping areas, Alan.
I know that they are in some places. And I know in Texas, some parks there, they have them already. And in Vietnam, they were dropping them from aircraft, these tiny little dart-shaped things, which were microphones, and they were dropped along trails so they could hear when the enemy were coming through.
Wow.
So they can also put tiny cameras on them nowadays, too. They're so minute. And they transmit to a fair distance. So, yeah, everything today is getting monitored for Big Brother.
You think they can hear when we whisper?
I'm pretty certain they could, yeah. Actually, they have us old technology. Yeah.
Isn't that a shame? Sometimes I whisper in my own home.
Uh-huh.
Because
well,
you just
moment,
don't know.
The only place that's safe is your own thoughts.
Yeah.
And if they get their way with brain chipping, then even that won't be safe anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's actually a woman apparently in Ontario who's supposedly got one of these chips and who's testing it out. And now whether it's propaganda for the chip, predictive programming is towards it, I don't know. But supposedly she wants to experience what the public will experience when they have to use the chip and their own thoughts to transmit messages to electronic messages to, let's say, their bank for withdrawing money with their codes and all this kind of stuff, and to find out if she can shield her thoughts and her code numbers from other people.
Wow.
So this is where this is all predictive programming, I think, the story itself is, to get us used to the supposed inevitability of this coming our way. Yeah. But that was apparently in one of the papers here. So this is coming. So yeah, your thoughts are the only place at the moment that are pretty safe. But if they get their way, it won't be for long. They want, you see, for a totalitarian system to survive, everyone must be completely predictable. That's why they like uniformity, they like groups. And so on. They don't like individuality. It's the individual that gives them problems, not the group. The group's easy to control, and that's always been their problem, is the individual, you see. So they want everyone to be completely predictable for control purposes. And this isn't my idea. This is what H.G. Wells, the propagandist for the British government, and Lord Bertrand Russell, that worked with the Tavistock Institute in London, this is what they say in their own books. They have to create a world where everyone is completely 100% predictable for control purposes. That's what they call peace. When you have
that's
no free will of your own.
Control.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And that's what they're bringing about step by step. And of course the computer is only one step towards it, to get us used to it, because we are so adaptable. And they said this in ancient Greece, that the human being was the most adaptable species on the planet. So whatever gadget or gizmo they give to us, we adapt so quickly towards it that soon we can't really think of living without it. And of course the computer now is taking over so much of a person's life, with their banking and shopping and information transfers as a stepping stone towards the inevitable, which is a brain chip, which is their virtual reality. And they're already working through movies to make this sort of thing appealing to children by telling them, oh, you'll be like your favorite comic stars, you'll have superhuman powers of telepathy, and you can open things at will by thinking a thought with having this cyborg-type body and a brain chip there. This is how it's been put to the people. But in reality, once everyone's got their chip, the main switch will kick in, and the real purpose will also take over, which is no more you as an individual.
Right.
That's the purpose of it all.
Yeah. When you talked about people getting so used to their gadgets, and when we moved in here,
uh-huh.
when we saw the home, it never occurred to me to look to see, was there a dishwasher?
Oh, yeah.
Because every home has a dishwasher, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am mine, yeah.
Well, and we got here, and all the furniture was piled up all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, I looked around, and I said, Chuck, there's no dishwasher here.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, my God, what am I going to do? And I looked at the cabinets, and I thought, I can't give up any of these cabinets. I need them all.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, knee-jerk, was totally bent because I couldn't imagine what I was going to do. And then suddenly I said, well, I guess that means hand-washing the dishes.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Heck. I mean, it's just fine with me now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes I let them stack up in the sink for a day.
Yeah.
A day and a half sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And then have to wash them all. But it's amazing how we actually think we need some
yeah.
of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat there and I thought, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, you
are. People now who won't even think of using a landline if they've got a cell phone.
Yeah.
In fact, there was one guy in the Toronto airport when no phones were allowed after 9/11 for a week or two. He was crying on the news because he couldn't use his cell phone in the airport.
Oh,
and
my.
Right behind him, you saw all these Bell landlines. The phone booths right behind them, but it didn't dawn on them to use them, you know. That's how quick people adapt to every bit of gadgetry that's given to them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we are out of our hour
mm-hmm.
already, and it's amazing how fast it goes. You're
yeah.
coming back with us tomorrow night, aren't you?
Sure, I sure will, yeah.
Okay, well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being with us tonight. We were kind of all over the place. Of course, we always are, aren't we, Alan?
That's the best way. It's non-linear thinking.
Non-linear thinking.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because we never know when we're coming on what we're going to talk about.
That's natural, yeah.
Well, yes. We'll be back with you folks tomorrow night. I wanted to mention, I'm hearing from some of our former shortwave listeners who are now listening on the internet, and I want you all to know that our radio broadcast airtime bill has already been settled. It happened just late last month, I guess it was, but if you want to help to support the broadcast, I would ask.
FirstAmendmentRadio.com has made available a very low-cost satellite system special just for First Amendment Radio listeners. In conjunction with Rick Satellite, you can now receive a complete system, including receiver, LNB, and small satellite dish, all for only $169 delivered to your door. Go to the FirstAmendmentRadio.com homepage and click on the satellite